This program is not censored. Consider yourself warned.
So, the way it looks to me is that you can either sign here and take $10,000 for your toilet paper script, or you can go fuck yourself.
When a script is written that is so bad that no one will film it, two men will bring it to life just so they can mock it. This is Table Reads.
So the movie's kaput, which means your script ain't worth the buffalo shit on a nickel.
Table Reads with Sean McBee and Trevor Thompson.
Hey everybody, Sean McBee here. Over here is Trevor Thompson to my left, because you can see him.
That's right.
And we have a special guest today, and hopefully bring it on through the future. Trevor and I have always lamented a little bit that
we're not black enough that a
script read by only two people doing as many silly voices as they can is a little inadequate.
And also, you know, the quality of the silly voices are not always that good with us because we tend to forget. We don't write down which characters we assign to which silly voices.
Yeah, so we come back later and different characters sound differently if you listen to the episodes back to back.
Yeah.
But that's not going to change.
It's a good thing this isn't our job because we're not really good at this.
Anyway, we'd like to welcome you to, introduce you to our good friend Jimmy Williams, who you may know if you listen to our other podcast, Touche El Douche, as our third wheel there.
Our third heel.
also accurate.
He's a good guy.
So Jimmy, say hello.
And Jim,
hello everybody.
And Jimmy's qualified to be here too, also because he's
also a bad screenwriter.
He's also
written screenplays that do not sell.
That's right. Yep. like me and Sean, we've the level of failure here is now complete. Actually, it was complete before, but now there's just extra fail.
Yeah, extra fail. And we're going to hopefully bring in some more people. After this script, I have an actual female person that wants to be on our show.
Could you say that more? Could you say that more like this was a clubhouse for boys?
You don't
have an actual girl.
Do your spanky voice. Put your spanky voice on.
We have an actual girl, you guys.
We'll have to put the gross sign out front.
Yeah, get rid of slimy girls. No girls allowed.
So without further ado, I think we should, do you have a music set up that I sent
you? No, not at all. I have music that you sent me and I looked at it when you walked in the door. It was the first time I opened this thing. I didn't have it like,
oh, you should make like a playlist.
Cause I didn't know if this was like for this or if it was, I was knee deep in the Space Jam review nonsense. All that bullshit.
Well, if you can just like throw it in a quick playlist,
I can
throw it on.
I'm gonna do that right now
on Shuffle. I've downloaded some free royalty free music, so we don't get in trouble. But we'll still ignore that when we do a Superman or a Batman script or something that has an existing soundtrack from a different iteration. And we've got so many good scripts, you guys. So many good scripts coming up.
I wouldn't call them good.
Okay. So many exciting prospects of mockery.
I wouldn't say that either. I would say scripts that we're not... I would say scripts. We have scripts.
I said exciting prospects of mockery.
Ah, okay.
He's trying to talk about how cool it's going to be that we're going to have a bunch of shit to talk about, Trevor. Damn.
Yeah. I know what he's trying to do.
Trevor's like, but that's my point.
It's going to be great. We've got early versions of things that did come out that are completely unrelated to what actually came out, like Sam Hamm, the great screenwriter of the 1989 Batman film.
Yep.
Did you know he wrote a Watchmen film in 1989?
I think that question was directed at you, Jimmy.
No, that was directed
at
no. It was directed at the audience. I'm waiting for him to answer.
Yeah. It was rhetorical, Trevor.
Sorry, guys.
Send your emails to thepast at... but yeah, he did, and we have it, and we're going to read it. We have a script that I'm really excited about that Trevor always assumed was just a myth. And for Trevor to not really know that this actual script existed is impressive because... It's right up his wheelhouse, and it's Roger Rabbit 2.
Yeah. I knew that. Here's what I knew about that script, and it's called Toon Patrol. right?
Mm-hmm.
Roger Rabbit 2, Toon Patrol. The only thing I knew in my, and the whole, my whole gimmick is that, you know, I'm the animation guy in this little group here, is, because I know the, you know, people that worked on it and stuff like that, and they did a test of Roger Rabbit to see if he would look good with the CGI treatment, and the name on the reel was Toon Patrol. I don't know if it was, and also there was a video game called Toon Patrol.
It's a whole script.
Yeah.
I've got it. We're going to read it.
And it was,
not today though.
If memory serves, the guy that wrote it never heard his name before.
I looked him up though.
Who is he?
I don't know. Exactly. I don't remember, but he has credits for real movies.
Hmm.
When searching for unproduced scripts,
it's
important to separate the fan written garbage from actual real written scripts that actually had a shot at being made at some point.
By the way, we're not averse to reading fan made garbage. It's just that it has to be our fan made garbage that we wrote when we were kids.
Exactly.
It'd be a help to actually be a fan of screenwriters and actually know a lot of screenwriters out there.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm a screenwriter and I don't know that many.
Well, here's the thing.
Well, that's because when you were in LA, you stayed indoors and wrote rather than went out and socialized.
So here's the thing. If we're going to
do it again,
if you're
all over again,
God, can I talk? If you're a professional screenwriter, then being mocked for something you've screenwritten is completely fair game.
Yeah.
If you are an aspiring screenwriter,
That
we don't even know, then we're not going to mock you. That's not cool.
Yeah.
So, I found a Goonies 2 script, but it was just some fan bullshit, and it was, 8 pages long or something.
You don't understand how excited you temporarily got me. I'm mad at you about that, actually.
You know, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But
I bet you got mad, too.
I was mad, yeah. I looked it up, and it turned out that it was just some fan thing, and it was probably worse, too bad to actually read on the air
this show?
Yeah. But you know, I'm not gonna make fun of that guy if I don't know him and I don't have his consent to mock him.
What can you tell us?
I don't know Chris Columbus.
I don't know Chris Columbus, but Chris Columbus is a professional, and so it's fair game.
Yeah, but he might cry like a bitch, and the guy who wrote the Goonies thing is probably a tough motherfucker. I mean, let's just mock everybody, man.
No, man.
Why not, man?
Yeah, why not? Fuck them. They're people.
Why not, man? Yeah, they could take it. Plus, they're artists, too.
Plus, they're making a living at what we wish we were making a living at. Fuck them. Let's have a bad attitude about it.
You know what?
Especially if they got a
mockable script. We'll revisit this argument when we run out of stuff that fits my current parameters.
All right. Oh, master.
Well, yeah.
Master of the parameters.
This is Sean's show. Sean is the master of ceremonies around on this show. I'm surprised, actually, that I haven't let him sit behind the board.
I don't want to sit behind the board.
I don't want you there either.
I want you to be my board monkey.
That's atta girl. There we go. So let's talk about this script. What can you tell me about Carnivore? Because I am delightfully in the dark.
What I can tell you about it is that it was written by Larry and Andy Wachowski, back when they were still Larry and Andy Wachowski.
Mm-hmm.
They wrote it before they wrote Assassins or anything else they've ever done. And no one made it. And so it's fallen to us. We have to bring this script to life.
So nothing came of it? Nothing like a job, a different writing job or something else? Or
no idea.
Jimmy,
I know that one of my favorite movies is Carnivore, I think by Roger Corman.
Carnosaur, I thought that was.
Oh, it's Carnosaur, yeah. Maybe that's one of the reasons why they didn't get their stuff made, is weird stuff
you
like
know,
that.
You know, that really
out.
That really sounds like it's about a dinosaur.
It is.
I don't think this is.
No.
I don't know. I can't tell what this is about. I think something with fangs, maybe.
Clearly it's about a leaf eater.
It sounds to me like a cheesy horror movie. It sounds like they were trying to get in on the slasher flick craze of the 90s. The 90s was kind of a dead zone for slasher flicks, actually.
No,
yeah, you just had Scream.
No, because in the 80s, you had the great slasher flick craze. And in the 2000s, you had a resurgence with the remakes of everything. But in the 90s, really all we had was, like Jimmy said, Scream. which was
Jimmy's underestimating.
But it was a send up of the slasher.
Scream was such a huge fucking hit that it brought back the genre for a little while. I mean, we had Freddy versus Jason. We forgot. Yeah. I mean, that movie.
We had Jason X.
The two Chucky movies. We wouldn't have had those if they weren't for the Scream success.
Jimmy, I guarantee if you went to like a Friday the 13th convention and started asking all the like diehard Jason fans about Jason X, they would disavow it.
How wonderful a movie is that, though? I had such a good time watching that movie.
I hear you talking, but I watched a documentary on Jason recently, and there was a lot of people on there praising Jason.
Yeah. You know,
they were talking about the nipples that fell off robot.
I think I saw that one.
With Trevor.
There was one point that I really, really loved in that movie.
No. Sean was there, too, I thought. That's why I said it was one of the most fun experiences I had in the theater.
My favorite point in the entire film is where the guy's like, it's okay, he just wanted his machete.
I love when they set him up in the
space room with the two chicks that are like, we love
premarital sex.
Okay, so let's get down to
let's stop having fun and get into this script.
I think we need to tell Jimmy how this works here.
Yeah, break it down.
We're going to read the script, and
then it'll be over.
One of us is going to read the directions, as well as doing characters, and sort of we just decide who does characters as we go along.
Yeah,
as a character, and you have to try to remember which character you did, so that you can pick up on that later.
So I only get one character.
No. We're going to split up the characters, and it's going to be a little difficult because you want to try to not do two characters that end up interacting with each other a lot, because then you just got one person reading both sides of conversation. It's a little weird. So, you know, when we do something that we're somewhat familiar with, like a Batman versus Superman script that we just finished, then, you know, we know who's more likely to interact with one another. You know, if he's Superman and I'm Batman, pretty much we know that...
If he's Superman and I'm Batman, that makes you... What?
We know Batman's probably going to interact with the Joker, so he should probably be the Joker if I'm Batman, and then I should be Lex Luthor if he's Superman, and that's how we did it, and it worked out pretty well. And
we're still here.
And we have to do, you know, different voices to differentiate the characters.
And usually you're the one that reads the directions.
Yeah, because you're not a strong reader.
Are you waiting for me to debate you? What the fuck? What's with the pause?
No. Waiting for you to get down gulping, motherfucker.
It's a big cup. I have a big mouth.
So,
well, I'm looking at this thing and I'm going, yeah. It's going to be a little difficult because we have no fucking idea who John is, Kuro is, any of these people. And how often they'll talk to each other.
We'll work it out, and if we have to change it up as we go, then we do.
Yes. All right, improvisation.
But, yeah, it's all pretty much by the seat of your pants. There are some scripts where I have it pretty much like nailed down in Final Draft, so I can do a character report, and it will show like you can list all the characters by how many lines they have. So then we could potentially, theoretically, use that to plan stuff out a little bit, and we'll maybe do that in the future. Couldn't do that with this script. So, you want to just get us rolling?
Fade in.
Actually, Jimmy, do you want to do the directions?
Sure. Gives me stuff to do. Why not?
Yeah, you know what? Let me give you that fade in again, Jimmy.
You're going to give me the fade in so I don't have to do it?
That's right.
All right.
Sean paid a guy to do this for you, so...
Fade in.
Exterior, city street, night. Dreamlike tides of shadow swirl around the wet phosphorescent streetlights that glow dimly in a desolate urban intersection. It is fall. The misty breath of winter rises up through the sewer grates. Huddled in a small doorway is a figure swaddled in darkness. We hear footsteps, expensive shoes clicking against the pavement in a brisky city gate. The figure stirs. A well-dressed man passes the doorway as the figure raises its head. It is Kuro. Kuro is dressed in rags. His jet black skin, including his face and bald head, is covered with blue tattoos.
Well, he's black. You may as well go ahead and be Kuru.
I'm Kuru. All right, Groovy.
Hey, Mister? By the way, Jimmy, how close are you to the mic?
I'm this close now.
Atta girl. That's where you need to be. You need to be like an inch or two away from...
Like I need to hold it like Winky Weckerman or whatever the heck my man's name was, John Candy's character.
Yeah, John Candy. Weird Wink Wilkinson laughing and scrapping at you.
Woo!
That looks really weird. Can we do a little shot before us?
It got made into a movie. Sorry.
All right. I'm gonna.
Two movies.
Yeah.
Let's start with Kuru at the top again. All right, Kuru.
Kuru.
Mister? His hand reaches for the shadows. Mister? You got a dollar, mister? The man ignores him as Kuru rises behind him. Mister? Mister, please, I'm hungry. Walking even faster, the man continues past Kuru as he strides into the street. Oops, sorry, scroll too fast. Excuse me. Back it up. Oh, that was a good scroll. All right. It's like you gotta watch the speed on this thing. All right. Walking even faster, the man continues past Kuru as he strides into the street against the blinking "Don't Walk" sign. Kuru, Mister, hey, Mister! A horn explodes as a car booms past, almost hitting the man. He shrieks. Kuru's laughter echoes from the dark. The man looks back, but Kuru is gone. He scurries across the street toward the layered concrete parking garage. Dead neon causes the vertical sign to read, "Rage." Interior garage doorway night. Jesus. The man climbs quickly, the metal stairs ringing, "Doom, doom, doom." As he reaches his level, a whisper floats up from the garage's concrete balls. Kuru.
Bowels, not balls.
Balls.
It sounded like you said balls.
It did sound like you said balls.
I did say balls, actually.
Man, I had some concrete balls.
Mister! The man looks over the railing but sees only shadow. He then turns and pushes through the door. Interior parking garage night. The gray garage is damp and cold, every sound echoing as though it were inside a whale. Nervous, the man hurries toward the only car on the level.
As though it were inside a whale.
That's a good reference.
I thought about that as soon as I said it, and I was like, just move on. Just move on past it, because you're a screenwriter. You think, wow, you put that in there?
Yeah.
Because everybody's point of reference for echoing sounds is like Jonah or Pinocchio.
What was the script you were reading the other day, Sean, that you were telling me about, where the directions were all
Crow
about...
The Crow 3,
yeah, which was all about where the camera was going to be. And
yeah, you'll see.
I can't wait for that one. Please, can I be the crow?
Of course.
Yay.
Yeah, you got to be, actually.
A fat crow.
Oh, yeah, Jimmy, that's the one thing I forgot to tell you, is if there's something ridiculous, don't just push by it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mockery is the whole point of this podcast. Yes.
I am tripping on that because I'm going, wow, there's just, I've been looked at that about three times and showed it to Trevor and said, what the fuck you think about that? And he would have said, well, and I would have got rid of it.
That was our system. Well.
Yeah. I don't want nobody looking at that and thinking anything other than keep going.
Yeah.
All right. Keep nervous. Moving. The man hurries toward the only car on the level, his red Saab. He digs out his keys and hits the remote alarm. Remote alarm kicks on. Far away, we hear a rattling metal sound. Let's hear the rattling metal sound.
Oh, shit. There's nothing metal here. Hang on, I got you.
I got keys in my pocket.
Oh, yeah.
Use that. But they sound like keys.
I think that might be what the noise is.
Okay, all right, hit it. Hey, the man reaches the car, groping for the door handle as the rattling draws closer. I don't know if
Ebenezer Scrooge.
Yeah, they sound more like some kind of keys. I jumped into the car. Hi jumps into the car, locking the door.
Hi.
And
into the it's a typo.
Yeah. H-Y. Yeah. All right. Suddenly, a baseball bat arcs down so that the twisting of the key seems to shatter the windshield. The explosion of the glass becomes interior diner night.
Wait, hold on. What kind of diner are they going to?
It explodes from glass.
Oh, I guess maybe they do like the, remember the old video toaster effect where the screen would shatter and fall away.
Yeah, so
to reveal the diner.
So what you're saying is later.
No. I thought they were gonna do something more like when you transition from like when my man goes to go pee in a House of a Thousand Corpses. Oh, no, Devil's Rejects, and then all of a sudden you switch to the coffee pouring into the cup.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a lot more creative. No, Sean's talking about a video toaster wipe. So apparently later on in the screenplay we're gonna see like the silhouette of a stripper doing a cartwheel coming through, and that changes the thing.
Big balls on this shit. The explosion of glass becomes the crashing tinkle of dirty plate being thrown into a bin by a bus.
They did it. Okay, good.
Yeah, yeah. That's what it says. There's just the interior diner night in between. You got to be technical with these assholes out there. Gotta let them know where you're at.
The thing. You're not supposed to do that. This is how you can tell this is an early.
No. This is what you're supposed to do when you change a location. You put that in there because that's how they break everything down. How they know like where the locations are. Like the crow,
I know that I'm
the crow
that.
Script doesn't do any of that.
Really?
I'm just pointing out the fact that when you're making a transition like that, it's always a little weird because you're doing it from like one scene to another scene, so you have to have that direction in there, and it's really trippy. Yeah. And sometimes it just looks clunky. The crash and tinkle of dirty plates being thrown into a bin by a busboy clearing them from the table of an old diner. Once the table is cleared by the quick automatic hands, the busboy wipes it down with a gray rag because he's on it, man. He knows how to play. He then places a setting, a napkin, a fork, and a spoon, a knife. The utensils are heavy-duty stainless steel. The knife is flat like a butter knife, but the end is serrated and sharp enough to cut meat. This must mean something. We hold on to empty setting.
No. They just have a really specific knife in mind. Like this is exactly the knife that they use at Outback.
Yeah,
it's an Outback knife.
That Outback knife.
Oh, the steak knife. All right.
Sharp enough to cut meat.
Alrighty.
Barely.
Yeah. Barely.
Yeah. Serrated and sharpened, cut meat barely. We hold on the empty setting as if we were sitting at the table waiting to be served. So now we're sitting. Okay. John Bunyan throws his backpack in the booth and sits down at the empty setting.
Man, I'm starving.
John is a friendly looking fellow whose simple expression of awe behind the Times wardrobe immediately places him as new to the city. Aw shucks.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought.
The waitress steps over the table. John smiles.
Hi there.
She stands, pencil to pad, waiting for his order.
How are you tonight?
She sighs.
My feet hurt. I'm the waitress, motherfucker.
Well, you go on ahead, waitress.
He hasn't had a character yet. Give him something.
Yeah, I want to hear him anyway.
My feet hurt, my back is killing me, and I smell like a hamburger. Now what can I get you?
Let me see here.
He runs his finger down the menu. Not the items, but the prices.
I'll have the hamburger special.
To drink?
No, to eat, you dumb bitch.
I was going
to
say.
Water is fine.
Let me give you some advice, country. When in Rome, do like the Romans, okay?
She leaves. John takes out $20 from a small compartment in his backpack, then zips it back up. In the background, there is a commotion that swallows the normal diner noise. John turns and we follow his gaze to a far booth where a man and woman are having an argument. Ophelia is a young, attractive woman who is uncomfortably overdressed, expecting to be in a more formal restaurant. Her date, Roman Lynx, has the face of a
weasel. Do like the Romans do.
Oh, fuck me, frankly. All right. His hair is slicked back into a ponytail, and he is also overdressed, but quite comfortable. He holds up his hamburger to her mouth, trying to get her to taste it. Ophelia.
I'll be Ophelia. No, you know I don't eat red meat.
It ain't fucking red. Look at it. It's brown. Just try it.
No.
Lynx slaps the burger down.
Shit. Why go out if you never try nothing?
You call this going out?
Oh, I'm sorry. This place isn't good enough for your highness.
Ain't. Puts a whole different spin on that read.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Lynx. She tries to lower the argument.
I didn't mean that.
What the fuck difference does it make where you eat? All you ever want is a fucking salad. I take you to the fucking Ritz. You'd order a fucking salad.
You have no idea what I want.
She snatches up her purse and coat.
You ain't going anywhere till you clean that plate.
He snatches her by the wrist.
Your dad.
Yeah, that's right. He's handling that shit. Hell, yeah. That bitch. He snatches her by the wrist. Ah! She struggles, then grabs her fork with her free hand.
Fuck you. Fuck your salad.
She stabs him with the fork, just hard enough to make him let go. Before she can get out of the booth, he catches hold of her hair, yanking her head down.
You foul-mouthed bitch!
He forces her face in the plate of salad and cottage cheese.
I like this guy. Now eat it! Eat it!
She squirms. She screams, squirming free. Her face covered with food, eyes burning and tearing. She runs for the nearest door, the woman's bathroom. Lynx calmly pushes the last oversized bite of burger into his mouth. He chews, glancing around. The diner's uncomfortably quiet.
I like how Jimmy's reading a sermon.
he chews, glancing
around.
The music is perfect for it, too, by the way.
He sips the last of his coffee, then politely dabs at the mouth with his napkin before getting up. Pimp. Lynx walks to the woman's bathroom and lightly knocks on the door.
Fifi? Open the door, it's Roman.
Leave me the fuck alone!
He smashes to open the door and goes inside and slams it shut. John looks around the room at the frozen employees and painters in the diner. Muffled behind the bathroom door, a sharp slap is heard and Ophelia cries out. There is another. The diner is silent, listening. John stands and slowly walks towards the bathroom as the waitress runs for the payphone. At the door, John can hear Lynx talking and Ophelia crying. He knocks. Lynx becomes quiet and John knocks again. The door swings open. Lynx has a huge black eye.
What the fuck?
I heard the woman crying.
That's me.
Oh. Sorry, baby.
I thought it was...
No. That's him.
That is him, okay. What the fuck?
I heard the woman crying.
Are you from another planet or something?
Why don't you leave her alone?
Link's bony finger pokes John in the chest.
Why don't you do what you're supposed to do and mind your own fucking business?
John shrugs, staring hard.
Too late now.
You got that right.
Lynx throws the first punch, but John blocks it, ramming a fist into Lynx's gut. Lynx doubles over as John grabs him, spinning him out of the bathroom, cocking another punch. He swings, mashing Lynx's thin, pointy nose, sending him sailing onto his back. Lynx scrambles to his feet. A wild man half splayed across his bleeding face and grabs a knife from the nearest table. Screaming, he rushes at John like an animal. John jumps back, but the knife slashes open his forearm. His hot blood speckles the bright white ceramic floor. John howls and lunges at Lynx, seizing hold of the knife hand and knocking both of them to the ground. They thrash wildly like dogs, Lynx even biting John, fighting for the knife until Ophelia stomps on Lynx's arm with her high heel and snatches up the knife.
Stop it! Stop it, Roman!
Both men recoil, standing. Lynx, his ears red hot, throws back his hair.
This ain't over. This ain't over.
He points at his bloody nose, staring at John.
I never forget. This dog's got a long memory. And you?
He stabs a finger at Ophelia, who is still holding a knife over him.
Pay for your own fucking salads. That's a great line.
They watch as he whirls, storming out of the diner. John, suddenly conscious of his bleeding arm, groans.
Oh my god, you're really hurt. It's okay, I think.
His knees buckle a bit at the sight of so much of his own blood, and he sits at one of the chrome tables.
Maybe not.
Ophelia digs out a handful of paper napkins from a dispenser and presses them to his wound.
I can't believe this. I mean, Roma's a little crazy, but what you did, it was really... Thank you.
John looks up into her smiling face.
Jimmy, do you want to take over, John, if these two are going to be talking back and forth this whole time?
Oh, man, they're a couple or some shit? Fuck, man. Yeah, you're right.
I don't know, but it's switching back and forth between them.
So far, I'm John Kuru and the narrator. All right. Okay. All right. I'm on. Okay, you start off with you're not from around here, are you?
You're not from around here, are you?
Just off the bus, actually. I didn't know it was that obvious. Ophelia looks up, suddenly uncomfortable that the eyes of the diner have been on them the entire time.
Listen.
John Bunyan. He shakes her hand using his left hand.
I'm Ophelia. We really need to get you to a doctor.
And I don't really have the money, but I'll be all right. So real.
Yeah.
Do you have some place to stay? Relatives?
He shakes his head. Ophelia looks at the clump of napkins, white, soaking red.
Well, that arm is going to get infected if we don't take care of it.
She thinks.
Come on.
Exterior, the mission, night. A cab pulls up outside the mission.
Wait, is this San Francisco?
I don't know.
It never said where it was, yeah. But it sounds like San Francisco so far.
All right, Ruby. A cab pulls up outside the mission. The mission is an old stone building that had once been a proud, magnificent landmark.
Oh, it is now it's a building. I thought it was like the Mission District.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? No, I figured it was a build. I figured it was the mission, you know.
So maybe it's now not San Francisco.
Yeah, could be from England. I mean, we have no idea where missions are. We're not on one. It is now a squatting corpse. With its boarded windows and crumbling brickwork, it wears an edifice of dark urban decay. John follows Ophelia from the cab into the alley that runs behind the mission. Exterior, the alley, night. Ophelia pounds on the heavy steel door. What is this place?
It used to be something like a YMCA.
Great delivery on that line, by the way.
What is this place?
I mean, come on now, man. Break, break, break. All right.
Location does not compute.
You did say that like a GPS voice.
Can you imagine if your GPS was like, what is this place?
I have no idea where the fuck we are.
Doom!
Take me back to Walgreens. That is, if you can ever find it again.
It used to be something like a YMCA, but it was condemned. A man named Rex Mundy somehow convinced the city to let him run a soup kitchen out of it. Isn't Rex Mundy a comic book character?
She pounds on the door again.
Granny! Granny!
Your grandmother's name's Granny? I mean, your grandmother's house?
What if she'd never had kids? What a bad, poorly named woman.
No, her name's Gretchen, but she told me to call her Granny. She's the cook.
From inside, we hear a faint old voice.
Yo, they just left a diner. They don't need a cook. They need a doctor.
Yeah.
He don't want no doctor.
And she stops. You gotta be. And she stops.
Jimmy, you want to be Granny?
Well, I don't want. I want to hear Trevor's Granny like a motherfucker.
Oh, is it okay? It's her first line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, how should I do her?
A faint old voice.
Oh, okay. Faint. Let me get off mic. Hang on.
Dude, no, don't get off mic. Just June Foray the shit.
I can't. Dude, if I could do June Foray. We're closed. Come back tomorrow.
Granny, wait. It's Ophelia. I have a friend here who's hurt, bleeding. I was hoping you could...
I guess it is a long pause, right?
Mm-hmm. Jimmy? Jimmy?
Jim.
Oh, he dead.
Wow, he's like, fuck us.
See, this is the problem with long-distance podcasting.
I feel like potting up this music, so it's, you know, like the on-hold music while we're waiting.
This is really good background music. In general, so far.
Yeah.
Until we get to something.
It hasn't been out of character yet. Or
yeah, that's what tone. I mean.
Thank you for taking the time to podcast with us, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be getting back on track any moment now.
Well, I'll just read the directions while we try to get Jimmy back on the line. After a long pause, a series of locks and bolts click and slide before the door finally opens. Granny is a woman who looks impossibly old and thin and wrinkled as a willow tree.
She was in her later years very old.
Yes. and wrinkled as a willow tree, but has the boundless energy of a child. Her smile is a checkerboard of lost teeth, gladly given for the chocolate she constantly consumes. Granny, this is John. Her gaze fixes immediately on the cut on his arm, and her eyes bulge. Oh, that's you, sorry.
Oh, blood. Oh, come in. Come in quick. I love blood.
She pulls them inside, and the door slams shut. We hear the locks and bolts snapping back into place. Interior mission, dining hall, night, and Jimmy is back.
I think we got Jimmy back.
Jimmy?
Yes.
There we go.
All right. We're going on without you. until we got you back on the line. So we're down.
That was a long pause.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what we said.
We're down at the next slug line.
The dining hall is cavernous. Is a cavernous room.
All right, hold on a second.
Granny saw the blood and she was all a Twitter.
I got it. All right.
She got the vapors.
I was watching my programs and then I realized. I was watching my stories.
Shut up. The dining hall is a cavernous room that seems to have no walls or ceiling, only endless rows of cheap fold-out tables and chairs. Beneath nasal, humming, fluorescent light, Granny sits hunched over John's arm. Ophelia, leaning in, dabs at the wound with a wet, bloody towel. Close on a large button hook as Granny pushes another stitch through the flaps of skin. She then pulls, drawing the stitch together. John winces.
By the way, is anyone else picturing the Oracle when they picture this Granny?
Nope.
No? Okay.
Almost done. There. Just like sewing up a turkey.
Doesn't sound shit like the Oracle. She wraps it with a gauze as Ophelia hands her strips of tape.
Which one of you fuckers is John?
Jimmy.
Oh, I am.
Taking over.
I'm totally John. Feels better already.
Just bad enough for a nice scar and a good story.
She winks at him. I don't know how to thank you.
Oh, no. Well,
an idea slips into her mind and a smile creeps across her face.
Okay, how about a kiss?
Yeah, Ophelia laughs.
Granny!
Oh, it's not like that. I haven't felt anything down there in years. Just a little sweet little thank you, that's all.
Sure. Granny leans forward and her eyes close, lips puckered. John puts a hand on her shoulder, leaning in, deciding to close his own eyes. The moment is painfully slow to arrive as they inch closer and closer until finally their lips touch. Granny pops.
A little right. Over the top, Trevor.
Yeah, I mean, damn.
I mean, how do you guys kiss old ladies?
I don't know, a little wetter than that. Shit, that sounds like sneakers on a floor. Granny,
I'm not eating her pussy. I mean, good God, man.
Well, you're not stripling either. Granny pops back, cackling with laughter. She's cackling. Cackle better.
No.
Asshole. John laughs awkwardly as he licks her lips. As she licks her lips. Tasting the kiss.
Yes, yes. Very nice of Ophelia. You ought to give them a try.
You know, they did this in the... Was it Reloaded? With Persephone?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's something about this kiss shit that they probably missed it. Yeah.
Maybe they really loved this scene and were sad they didn't get to make it.
And who can blame them?
This is riveting. So they put it in something. Yeah.
They should have got all that shit out in Bound. A lot of freaky shit. All right, cackles with laughter, tastes the lips. All right, come on, Granny.
I already did that line.
Oh, Ophelia looks up at John. There is a hint of something beyond the smile of her lips.
Now, can I get you kids something to eat? Some chocolate? Ovaltine?
Sorry.
Sugar for the blood?
This is before diabetes, apparently.
Oh my God, he kissed her too. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Actually, Granny, there was something else. I brought John here because he's new to the city and has nowhere to go.
That's putting shit all out there like that. Granny is suddenly very uncomfortable.
Oh, you'd really have to ask the boss about that.
Is Rex here tonight?
Who's
at last, the fair Ophelia calls. They turn as Rex Mundi emerges from the black edges of the room. Ooh, sweet. Mundi is a dark-featured man. Damn, always playing these dark motherfuckers. Tall and sinewy, who forever seems to be cast in the shadow. Sinewy. I'm not liking this. Yeah. I'm always some
dark. I'll do it. I'll be Mundi. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, this shit's getting racial. All right, so she's going to be Mundi.
Trevor needs a nice deep-throated voice to perform. Yeah,
you need some shade, nigga.
That's right. All right.
Eternus Rex Mundi emerges from the black edges of the room. Mundi is a dark-featured man, tall and sinewy, who forever seems to be cast in shadow. His clothes have an antique quality to them, which includes a battered stovepipe hat. He smiles, gliding across the room, his eyes riveted on Ophelia.
Rex, I thought you'd gone out.
You know me, Gretchen. Always about.
What the fuck? Mundi takes Ophelia's hand, holding it almost to his lips. His face hovers over her, nostrils flaring. Inhaling the scent of her soft skin. I'm so glad I didn't play this motherfucker. Then, ever so delicately, he kisses it. Mundi.
To what do we owe this savory surprise? Tell me, how is Miss Shelley?
She's good. I'll tell her that you say hello.
Mundi nods.
The reason I'm here, Rex, is for my friend, John Bunyan. He's looking for a job, a place to stay, anything.
Ophelia gestures to John, but Mundi does not look away from her.
You did promise me a dishwasher, Rex.
Mundi considers this, turning, appraising John. He notices the bright white gauze bandage and the small spot of blood seeping through.
Are we running an animal shelter now, Gretchen? Taking in every wounded stray?
I brought him here, Rex. It's my fault. He was hurt because he helped me. This is all I could think of.
Mundi watches John.
City's full of cheap hotels.
He doesn't have much money.
Why not bring him home?
Ophelia doesn't know how to answer, leaving an awkward silence.
We don't have the chicka chicka bow wow music. You didn't.
It's a shame.
Yeah.
Listen, it's okay. I don't need any charity.
I am not offering charity. Charity has no place here.
I thought this was a soup kitchen.
Oh, it is. But it is not run out of charity. There's a bargain, a contract, if you will. I offer a bowl of stew in exchange for an appetite.
Can you give him like a creepy, slightly British accent?
Slightly British.
Yes, like, but it is not run out of charity. You know, just
so
one
like
of those
a like a Mr. Burns, like a deep-throated Mr. Burns.
Yeah, except without the old man in it.
Oh, it is. But it is not. I like this music. It's not run out of charity. There is a bargain. A contract, if you will. I offer a bowl of stew in exchange for an appetite.
Yeah, I like him just slightly evil like that.
Okay.
Like Draculean without the Romanian.
Okay.
I wish you could do Mr. Hand. I like that voice. John is confused.
Mr. Hand? Wait a minute. Which, you know, there's a couple of Mr.
Fast
Hands.
Fast Times at Ridgemont.
Who?
Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I wish I could do Mr. Hand. Yeah.
Fine. I thought you meant Mr. Hand.
That's what I thought he was saying. Yeah. I was like, but I feel bad.
No.
C. There are a few. D. F. F. For 3 weeks, we've been talking about the plot amendment. What are you people? On dope? That's Mr. Hand.
Okay.
So you want that? I can do that.
No. You can do Mr. Hand?
I can do all that. Right. I can do what I just did.
I think the creepier one's better. You all ain't right. Got Mr. Hand.
No, yeah, this guy seems creepy as fuck.
Yeah. This is my mission, you see. To teach those that will listen that no one need ever be hungry.
He has a voice that seems...
Oops.
Sorry. Good job, Trevor.
It's this stupid track fucking... Go. He has a voice that seems like...
That's bumping, though. He has a voice that seems to weave the words around his audience.
2% of the world's population controls 90% of the world's wealth. It sounds obscene, doesn't it? I should just be really doing Orson.
Just...
I mean, why not?
Pick one, motherfucker.
2% of the world's population controls 90% of the world's wealth. It sounds obscene, doesn't it? Yet if you were to meet one of the 2 percenters, you would find them quite at ease with it. How do they do it?
His black eyes flash like spinning, like a spinning watch of a hypnotist.
What is that that they whisper to themselves when they open a closet full of fur coats or a garage full of sports cars? How do they justify the consumption of such while so many have so little? It is painfully simple. They may equivocate, they may obfuscate, but deep down the rich know exactly what I know. They know that this world is cruel, it is unfair, and uncaring, and its single guiding principle is dog-eat-dog.
Gee, you're cheery as ever, Rex.
Perhaps I should apologize for my candor.
Not necessary.
Well, in that case, would it be a fair question to ask what brought you to our Vanity Fair?
Your what?
To the big city.
I'm looking for a job.
Is that all? You seek nothing but a paycheck? You have no dreams, no aspirations?
Fuck, we've been talking about. No. I like to cook. I hope one day to open a restaurant.
Ah, ambition. Yes. That is something I can understand. Understand the dreams, and you understand the man. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so.
Let me tell you, Mr. Bunyan, that I am many things to many people, but I am first and always a pragmatist. My mission is growing, and Gretchen reminds me that I am in need of hands. I can offer you the bedroom above the kitchen and all of Gretchen's stew you can eat in exchange for your hand.
John is surprised by the offer, Mundi extending his hand.
We have a deal.
We have a deal.
Meat cleaver. Chunk.
it's the end of like, War Rooms.
Just like War Rooms, yeah. Yeah. Just swipe the money and get out. They shake left hands.
Oh.
Behind them, the door to the dining room opens and clangs shut. For a moment, silhouetted against the kitchen's light, we see a very large man.
Kuru. Come. Someone for you to meet.
Kuru moves into the room, and when he reaches the light, we see that it is the man with the blue tattoos.
Kuru, this is John, our new hand.
Kuru ignores John, whispering something in Mundi's ear.
I must be off. Business. Granny will show you the room, John. Ophelia?
He tips his hat.
It's always a pleasure.
Together, Kuru and Mundi leave.
I'll go find you some bedding, John. Bye now, Ophelia. Don't be a stranger.
Ophelia and John are alone again.
Yeah, you guys are gonna fuck.
Get ready, boy. Yeah.
And it might cut them jeans.
Don't be stalling. Come on, Ophelia.
I should be going, too.
Listen, do you think,
I thought you would never ask. Please come fuck me.
Starts sucking his dick.
Yes, very much yes.
Hold on,
that's actually the line.
ask your first question again. Your stuttering question.
Listen, do you think? Would you mind?
Would you like my number?
Yes, very much yes.
She has. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, that's the step all
you
over.
You guys are just fucking it all up, left and right.
You're an idiot.
Yes.
You're an idiot.
I was going to say asshole and then up.
And then we just fucked it right up again. It's like, prove my point.
I'm the worst. What's our time on this episode?
You're an idiot-hole.
I'm stuttering John, though, man.
We're like 48 minutes. Howard, are you going to call? Stuttering John. Come on.
She hands him a business card she already had in her hand. It reads, Slimage Surgery Center.
Who the fuck is going there?
Slimage
Surgery. I need surgery. I know. How about that Slimage place? That sounds hygienic.
It sounds like a Harry Potter character.
Also, I like that they call it a Surgery Center because, you know, I like the feeling of an in-and-out sort of a strip mall surgery feel.
Slimage Malfoy.
I got things to do.
Slimage. That can't be how it's pronounced. It's probably like Slimage. It can't be Slimage.
Yeah, I liked it my way. Shut up. I like it my way.
I did it my way.
Slimmage would have two M's.
Fair enough. Slimage.
It's where I work. I wrote my home number on the back. Call me.
I will. He watches her leave, then regards his increasingly throbbing arm.
Oh, it's his arm. It's his arm that's throbbing. And it changes the line, too, on the direction. It's like it says throbbing, and then the next line is arm, so you're waiting for that. Dick.
You're waiting
for
that.
He's like, just like he looks down like, oh, God, you're hungry, oh, aren't man. You, Jim?
The spot of blood growing wider. Interior, John's bedroom, night. John stands in the doorframe of the small, dark room. It is bare of furniture except for a twin-sized metal frame bed and broken chair. A layer of dust covers the floor like moss. A naked bulb hangs above John's head. He tugs in the pull chain, but the bulb is burnt out. Damn, low life, Nick. Interior, John's bathroom, night. John throws a wall switch and a buzzing strip light flickers. Cancerous spots of mildew grow everywhere on their dirty tub, shower curtain, and tile. John urinates and flushes the toilet, then leaving the light on, he edges back into his bedroom.
Yeah, our hero pees right on cancer.
Yeah.
Good for you.
His house is Joe versus the volcano's office space. It's ridiculous. All right, John's bedroom, night. John sits on the bed, the metal springs shrieking beneath his weight. Yeah, shriek. He takes off his shoes and lays back, pulling a single blanket over him because he only got one blanket. After a long beat, we begin to become aware of faint noises from deep within the building. Pipes groaning, the distant hiss of a radiator. It is through the building we're trying to digest something.
It is though the building.
Yeah, it is true. But it's also true both ways, motherfucker. I like it my way. John's fist turned away from the sound. Interior, apartment, stairway, night. Crouched in the shadow behind the banister, Roman Link squats, hiding, watching Ophelia's door from the landing above. His breathing is labored. Open mouth as both nostrils are stuffed with wads of bloody, congealing cotton. Below, the lobby door opens and closes. Link presses against the spindles to watch as Ophelia climbs the stairs and crosses to the apartment. Silently, he descends the stairs, creeping towards her as she pulls out her keys and unlocks the door. Creepy motherfucker. A stair creaks. Ophelia looks back over her shoulders and sees Lynx. Ah! She screams as he lunges, grabbing at her coat. But she rips free of him, squeezing through her apartment door and locking it behind her.
Hey! Let me in!
He pounds on the door.
What do you want? What are you doing here?
I didn't mean to scare you, Fifi. I'm really sorry about what happened.
I didn't mean to scare you. That's why I just crept up on you in the dark.
Yeah, right.
With a bloody mouth. He leans against the door, mock pouting.
I went a little crazy, that's all. Please, Fee, open the door. I need you.
What happened to buy your own fucking salads?
You know I love it when you use that word.
Yeah? Then fuck off.
Ophelia feels the steel dinner knife still in her pocket.
Oh, she stole that shit from the restaurant.
Wow, she's a
thief. That's why we noticed it.
Bitch.
He rips out the knife, holding it up as if to stab him.
Don't call me that!
Fifi in the heat.
You little prick.
Fifi, come!
God damn you.
Good poodle.
Stop it!
Pretty poodle.
She screams, jamming the knife into the door. An inch of the blade splinters through, just missing Link's neck. Link steps back, laughing.
I'm calling the police.
I saw you leave with that guy. I saw you take him to that flop house.
What? You were following me?
He pulls out a small plastic folder that is labeled Master Series 1001 to 2001. Inside are five skeleton keys, of which Lynx draws the first.
It's killing me, Fee. Just thinking about you with somebody else. It's eating me up.
Hold on, skeleton keys? Like, what?
He's the manager of the building?
It's like Jingle Jangle, man.
How old is the building she's in?
Well, they still have skeleton keys. They still make them.
Yeah, they make doors for them and all that.
That's why landlords usually have them.
But not usually like the front door, like a closet door. I don't know. Whatever.
When was the script written?
Early 90s? Yeah, early 90s. Got a lot of competition back then. All right. See, here's the first key going to the lock. The lock jingles and as he twists it back and forth, but it does not open. He rips the key out, pulls another, and jams it in. Hell yeah. Ophelia backs away as he works it against the lock. Another key is pushed in, its teeth fighting tumblers. Ophelia yanks the knife out of the door.
Roman!
I need you, Phoebe.
he slides out the last key.
You're mine! My Phoebe!
He shoves it in, the teeth sawing into the keyhole.
I'm getting hard.
It's going to get out in and out.
Yeah.
The clock clicks and the door floats open, stopping lightly against the chain lock. Ophelia holds her breath. After a beat, ba-dum-bum, she hears his footsteps fade down the stairs. Ophelia leans against the door, still clutching the knife. Interior, John's bedroom, night. John sits up in his bed, hair heavy with sweat stuck to the side of his head. Dehydration carries him to the plipping bathroom sink. As he rises, we see that his sheets are soaked with blood. Interior, bathroom, night. John squints at his bleary-eyed reflection, turns on the water, and reaches for a glass. The glass is knocked from the sink top and shatters on the floor. Typical. Oh, great.
Oh, great.
John looks down immediately, sees why he broke the glass where his hand has been, is now a bloody bandaged stump. Oh, God! My hand! Where is my hand? Interior, John's bedroom. His body heaving in panic. John searches frantically around the room under the bed behind the radiator. Fucking moon, D! Where is it? Oh, God, not my hand. I need that.
Oh, God, not my hand. I need that.
Why couldn't he take something I don't need, like my gallbladder?
He turns for the hall. Interior kitchen. John finds Rex Mundi in the gleaming steel and tile kitchen, making himself a sandwich. Rex! Mundi smiles warmly behind a mouthful of strange condiments, meats, and produce.
Hello, John. Care to join me in a midnight snack?
Is that my hand, motherfucker? No, wait a minute. Mundi drags a serrated knife across a loaf of French bread. No, Rex. My hand. Look! My hand!
Oh, my. I see.
Someone stole my hand, man. I woke up, it was gone. Mundi butters the two long slices of bread with clumpy wads of mayonnaise, licking his fingers, chuckling slightly.
Relax, John. Relax. Can't you see you're only dreaming?
John stares, confused. What? Then, this isn't real? Mundi begins to pile things onto his sandwich.
Real? Oh, no, John. I didn't say that. Dreams are more real, more true than life itself.
He looks up.
They are the sum of us, John. Secrets whispered while we slumber, revealing who we are, and are sometimes all that we are.
Mundi returns to fixing his snack.
You say you are missing something. Your innocence, lost childhood perhaps, any sexual shortcomings of late?
My fucking hand! He smiles at John.
Have you, maybe, John, run off and sold your soul to the devil?
John begins to feel a sickness in his stomach.
Perhaps, though the answer is a more literal one.
Mundi closes the top of his sandwich.
A hand which is a sandwich turns a man into a meal.
He lifts the sandwich and John sees his hand between the two pieces of bread.
Jesus fucking Christ, this is predictable as hell. Care for a bite?
He takes a huge bite. Interior, John's bedroom, John's eyes.
Oh, how I love finger food.
I mean, come on. He's
oh, my God.
Mundy, Sean missed it because he went to the bathroom. Mundy is literally eating John's hand in a sandwich.
Well, yeah, I knew that was going to happen.
Yeah, because we predicted it, because this movie is predictable. But holy shit.
Trevor made a finger sandwich joke.
Yes.
Yeah.
Finger sandwich.
No, I could actually hear
finger
you.
Finger food.
I mean, from the bathroom, I heard the line, a hand which is a sandwich turns a man into a meal.
Yep.
A handwich. It was crazy.
Oh, that's how I should have said it. A hand which is a sandwich turns a man into a meal. I should have said
Don's eyes crack open. He rubs his hand, then his face. What happened to counting sheep? He rolls over. Interior Mission Kitchen Day.
Two close. Cheesy lines at the end of this fucking.
That shit was. They could have left that shit right out of there, man. And you can save some space and page and everything. Interior Mission Kitchen Day. Close as a pile of raw liver drops into a metal pot, sizzling with onions and yellow fat. Delicious.
Liver.
Just look at that image. Granny stirs the reddish brown meat into the mixture, then ladles in another cup of melted fat. As the steam blossoms up, she inhales deeply. A lot of like cannibalistic shit, weird imagery. Interior John's bedroom day. John, still asleep, begins to smell Granny's cooking wafting up through the floorboards. I like the word waft. The smell is suffocating,
you know,
as if his mouth were suddenly stuffed with liver and onions. That's a lot of description. His eyes pop open.
Jimmy?
Interior
Jimmy?
Yes, baby. Yes, yes.
Let's cut it off there.
Yeah, we're at an hour now.
So, all right, groovy.
So we'll just, we will.
Play the thing?
Well, I don't want to play the thing just yet because there's music to play, isn't there? I haven't done this in a while. What am I supposed to play?
Don't we have like a,
no.
Cut to black or something to differentiate?
I think we do. Perhaps a cut to black. That would be great if we had one of those.
The end.
That's not
no,
it.
No, that's not it. It's
previously
not the end.
On the table reads.
Oh, wait, no.
Cut to.
No. Fade to black.
Oh, you want fade to black. Sorry.
Fade out.
Oh, that'll do.
What?
Fade out.
All right.
So, Jimmy, this is the portion where we, We stop the script, we play that drop so that we know that now this is the part where we talk about what we just read.
I don't remember anything we read.
Yeah. I like the fade out thing. I remember when I was writing a screenplay out there in LA with Trevor back in those good old days.
Good old days.
Yeah. Back in the good times. Anyway, that was a very strict rule. It's fade out. Don't be fading to black.
I found our music. By the way.
Is that from what I just sent you?
No, this is from like back when we first started doing the podcast. A bunch of music that we played from the YouTube library that you
played. Cool.
So anyway, I have no idea what's going on in this script. I sense a lot of, like Jimmy said, you know, there's
cannibalism. Overtones.
Yeah. There's probably a witch doctor somewhere. But I'm not really sure.
It seems like there's a almost like a secret society type of situation going on, like an underground, and we're just seeing layers of it being peeled back and stuff, and the meaning to what the dreams are in reality. You know, we have no idea where that. I have no idea where the fuck that. But it does seem like there's like some kind of like a hierarchy, like one guy whispering in another guy's ear, some secret shit going on, the talk about the class structure and his mission. You know, he's in a mission, he's got a mission to, like, you know, show the world that they don't have to starve. And I don't know, he seems like the bad guy. You don't just be eating people's hands and you know. Yeah.
Yeah, everybody except for John and Ophelia is pretty creepy.
Yeah,
the old lady was like,
"I want a kiss."
Yeah, she seemed perfectly sweet until she's all like, "You should get you some of that, Ophelia."
Exactly, tasting.
She's just like, "Man, if that's what his lips taste like, I wonder what his cock tastes like."
See, that's what Persephone did after she kissed Neo. She, you know.
And can we just say, like, Persephone in that script, Ophelia in this script.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They were definitely onto something. This is, you said this was before The Matrix?
This was their first script ever.
Well, then you know what? It's a pretty good first script. It beats the fucking shit out of George Lucas's first script.
Well, this is George Lucas's every script.
That's true. Yeah.
So far, it beats the shit out of Assassins.
This is the downside with this podcast, that we like to go into these things cold,
yeah,
so that we have a genuine reaction. We are gonna sometimes come across a good script.
We are doing them cold. We should call it cold reads, not table reads.
No.
I'm not saying we should.
You just said the word
should. I know that, but I'm just...
Fucking with the fucking maestro? The master of ceremony over there?
How dare I?
Yeah.
But occasionally we'll come across something good, and we'll have to... Like, in this episode, I feel like there were only a few things that were outright deserving of mockery.
We pretty much grabbed them.
Yeah. I'm a little disappointed that this is so good so far, but, you know, I'll still enjoy it. Yeah. I'm enjoying reading it.
It could always fuck up real bad in the second and third act.
That is really, really true.
Yeah.
Intensely true.
It gets trickier as you go along.
So, with that in mind, why don't we take off? And everybody join us next week for part two of Carnivore by the Wachowskis.
Now, by the way, you and I should tell Jimmy to not get off Skype because...
Oh, yeah, don't hang up. We're going to record more.
All right, Groovy.
So just hang out, Jimmy.
Groovy.
Say goodbye, Sean.
Goodbye, Sean.
This podcast was created by Sean McBee and produced by Ferris Wheelhouse. Fuck. Cut to black.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.